Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we have such a mixed bag of issues to go through today.
Did you say mixed bag because one of them is a Wolverine issue?
Yeah.
In the 90s.
But we don't read the Wolverine story.
It's true.
Which is great. It's the best news possible when Wolverine is on the cover and you don't have to read him.
It's one of those funky issues where there's, you can read it from the back or the front, like you flip it around.
Yeah.
And so the last page of the story that we read was across from the last page of a Spider-Man story. We're like, oh, he's hot.
Yeah.
But then you read it and you're like, oh, but he's not being the most supportive of his wife who does amazing things.
Yeah.
The maleness of it all. Chauvinism?
Maybe. By the time this episode airs, I will have announced that the official book launch for my book, True North, is at the Uncanny Experience this summer.
Hooray.
So that's going to be really exciting.
Yeah.
And I'm deep in the editing process. Maybe by the time this airs, I'm done.
Maybe. That'd be nice.
Probably not accurate, though, since it's still May. Well, I have to get it done by the end of this month. So,
well,
yeah, there's no choice.
There you go.
So it's exciting for me to go through some of this stuff because I threw in this little story because it fills in a little bit. Like, it gives a little side adventure for one of the characters.
Yeah, who I feel like is often overlooked.
Yes. So should we get into it?
Yeah.
So this is Marvel Comics Presents issue 99 from March 1992. So we're jumping forward a little bit in time, but this story happened sort of around the same time as everything we're talking about otherwise. So it's a balancing act, like figuring out where things slotted. Luckily, alphaflight.info, they have a forum and people have gone back and forth, and they've settled on where the stories sit, which is really helpful.
Like fan consensus.
Yes. Like, okay, this little story is right in this time. And you look at what the character is doing, what they're saying, and it makes sense because this story is entitled Razor's Edge, but not the razor you think of. It's the Alpha Flight razor.
What's the other razor?
The one you use on your face.
Or Occam's.
I don't know what that means.
The most obvious solution is the more likely one.
Oh, that. All right. So our plot is by both Polifoy and Roz Mezenai. Scripter is Polifoy. Penciler is Joe Madureira, who is big in the X world.
Oh.
Inks Joe Rubinstein, who just phenomenal inks, pretty legendary in the field. Our coloring is Freddie Mendez, our letterer is Dave Sharp, and editor is Terry Cavanaugh, who maybe we'll actually get to meet Terry Cavanaugh if he's around at FlameCon.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I don't know if he ever comes out for those things, but it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Because Terry wrote one of those 93 annuals.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, the Web of Spider-Man one with the Cadre.
Oh, I saw things would be Nocturne, but that's also a good one with the Cadre.
I think it's Nocturne. No, I think it's the Cadre because he is writing Moon Knight at the same time, and that annual is basically a Moon Knight annual.
Yeah.
In disguise. Okay, so this might be the first appearance of this character on our podcast, Arcade. So
yeah.
Arcade has hacked into AlphaNex, which is Alpha Flight's computer system, and discovered the team's deepest secrets. And he's really focused on Puck.
He
wants the power within Puck in order to further his plans to turn the planet into one big murder world. Yeah. It's Arcade. It doesn't need to make sense, I guess. That's his plan.
For this fruity little villain?
Yeah, that's his overarching, I'm using Puck's power. I need Razor, maybe. It's a little convoluted.
Yeah, he thinks he can control Black Razor.
Right, but he needs Black Razor to emerge from Puck.
Yes.
So
he creates.
So what he does. So the secret one, he really focused on Puck's file for Black Razor.
Yep.
But also to figure out through his like surveillance of Alpha Flight that Puck is in love with Heather. So he is leveraging Puck's feelings for Heather in order to get at Black Razor.
You know what else Puck loves?
A barroom brawl.
A barroom brawl. That's exactly where I was going with it. And we get like the fun little like pencil-y sketch of Arcade above it, but then it's just like Puck having a great time punching out some punk.
But then he mopes that he can't offer Heather much. And then he's like, I guess I'll go home. He's very Eeyore.
His bartender friend who smashed a barrel over the other punk is there to help cheer him up before Puck walks off into the snow. And some little girl is like, my mom is dying in this barn. It's totally not a trap.
Where is he? I don't think we're given a location other than Polifoy is like Canada. You know, there's a barn down the street from every bar.
Would Jay Cosmic be mad at us if we say Calgary?
Oh, I mean, they do like putting anything rustic in Alberta in general.
It's very cattle ranch of a province.
It's like Dallas of Canada.
I guess sort of, yeah. I feel like, I wonder if the oil fields extend that far over, which they might. And the Okanagan is like some valley towards the U.S. border where they do a lot of cattle stuff.
Mm.
Plus the Calgary Stampede.
Yes.
As we've seen in an X-Men comics.
In Alpha Flight.
Also that.
Yeah. All right. So he enters this barn and the little girl's gone, but he doesn't have time to take in that fact before he sees Heather trapped in a cage.
It's weird. There's a disco ball. Arcade is basically being a DJ.
He's like a DJ in the sense that Lindsay Lohan was a DJ.
He's got a legit like file folder holder of records next to him. There's a disco ball, which I don't think I noticed the first time, but that's absolutely a disco ball with two Saturday Night Fevers dancers with hairy chests and big gold medallions. I think the little girl like disappears because she's dark blue in the foreground looking very sinister.
So Arcade welcomes Puck to his murderous nightclub, and the only way to save Heather is through a glass maze. And then some deadly looking carousel horses bear down on Heather, which increases Puck's sense of urgency to find a way to her.
Do you like the nickname for Puck? Puckerino, Puckster, Puckmeister, or Puckman?
Puckmeister.
I like Puckerino.
Okay.
It's like a cheese.
Yes, it sounds like a cheese.
Puckman, I would slip up too much and say Pac-Man.
So a giant metal head chases Puck down, sort of like Pac-Man.
It is, but there's flames coming out of the eyes and big fangs.
And then the horses trample Heather.
Yeah, there's a lot of monologuing, and Puck strips out of his coat and his flannel, because Canada, into his uniform. I like that the evil Pac-Man eats it, eats the his outer clothes. And he does a fun tumble, jump off the floor, jump off the wall, jump into the gaping maw. And then he rips out wires.
So in the depths of his despair over Heather seemingly dying, he allows Razor loose from his body. And that's what Arcade wanted to happen.
Which felt very fast. Granted, this is a quarter length story.
Yes, it's an 8-page story.
And all it took was that hologram and Puck was like, I give up.
And then Puck grows to his full height and age and realizes that even though, you know, Arcade wanted this to happen, it doesn't mean anything now that Heather's gone.
What does he have to live for?
Razor is angry at Arcade's intentions with him and starts slashing at Arcade, which makes Arcade grow shorter. We've seen this.
Yeah, it's a fun artistic thing to show the outline and around. So like what he was and versus like the actual image of him, which is smaller. Does that on a few different sides, different panels.
Arcade is like, oh, help me, Puck. I was just kidding. That was just a Heather hologram.
Arcade has landed on Puckster. But yeah, the Black Razor is in no mood. Smashes the equipment, slashes through Arcade a few times.
And so Puck is like, fine, you know, I'll help you. And he throws himself on Razor's sword, which traps Black Razor back into his body.
He grips it and then like tries to bite it. Like it's a very peculiar panel of like him slicing through his own head.
Yeah.
But that's what gets Black Razor back inside of him.
Arcade back up to his regular height, and he launches an escape craft to get away from the scene.
Thank you, Puckerino. You've apparently taken Black Razor's power before he could permanently keep my life force.
And Puck is like, all right, next time I meet that arcade, he's donezo.
It's weird.
It's...
Arcade is just so over the top.
He is. And that's the little story. That's our diversion to Puck.
Yeah. Arcade escapes to Won't You Take Me to Funky Town?
Yeah. Which,
camp.
Very camp. It's Lip Sync, a Minnesota group.
Oh, yeah. I got the extended version of that song for my phone.
Oh.
They play it at first wrestling shows before the show starts.
All right. Now we're back into the main storyline. So that, I fucked up and we didn't read this for the last episode. This technically slotted before issue 36.
Before they left for the birth of Snowbird's kid?
Correct.
Makes sense.
This is issue 39, The Invasion of Atlantis. Our writer is Bill Mantlow. David Ross, a true Canadian, is on pencils. Wills Portasio is on inks. Bob Sharon is our colorer. Letterer is Jim Novak. Our editor is Carl Potts.
And a guest starring the Mighty Avengers. So folks are on their way back to the base after the terrible encounter with Pestilence. Talisman is here again, but I don't think she says a single word. And they meet Beera. There's an alert, so Northstar, Aurora, and Puck go to figure out what's happening. And Beera says some very rude things to Puck, calling him a dwarf. Just the tone is very disrespectful.
So they understand why Beera is there, to seek their help. So they invite him in so he can actually explain why he's there.
Yeah.
And they hear that Marina's in danger.
And they're like, she's one of us. We have to go help her. Also, in a development that apparently happened off page, Snowbird is no longer bound to just Canada. She is like fully committed to the mortal realm. So she's tied to this mortal coil rather than Canada with her full godlike powers.
Yep. So Doug Thompson, he's pissed that she's joining the team, and she responds that her child and her marriage were anchors to the human world, and she wishes to see if the gods will accept her again now that her child is gone.
If
and
he forsakes those mistakes.
Yes, Doug is pissed and storms out.
Yeah, he's committed to saving their son, but he knows that Snowbird is not going to help him.
Yeah. All right, so then the team debates the legality of going to battle with Atlantis. As they're the official Canadian superhero team, and invading another sovereign nation could be seen as an act of war and spur an international incident.
And Puck actually fills in the gaps correctly for why Marina left after the encounter with Master of the World. Like the reaction, the shame, like the monstrous side of her that came out.
Yeah.
He's like, maybe she doesn't want us to rescue her, which like sort of true.
Yeah.
But also, she's a teammate and she's in trouble. She shouldn't be used as a pawn like that.
So as they're debating this legality, Gary Cody pops onto the view screen in the meeting room and says it quite possibly could be
an international incident.
Yep.
And not to go. And Heather's like, no strings attached. Wasn't that our deal when we accepted government funding, Gary? And he's like, well, yes.
But I also had listening devices installed everywhere in your mansion.
Yeah. So she blows up the screen.
Yep.
Good for her.
And they jump into the Omnijet to go to Atlantis.
Yeah. We got a cutaway scene with Marina and Atuma. Northstar is confronting Beera in a very rude sort of way. Where is Atlantis? We need to know so we can get there. And then he also needs to know how they're going to fight underwater. And Madison Jeffries is like, I got you. He made all sorts of suits for the team.
Yeah, he's like, I can transmute some suits so you can actually live.
And he does it on the fly.
Yeah. So they get into their suits just as the Omnijet is blasted out of the sky.
I mean, with the comment that from Aurora, like, it is so unstylish.
So the debris is falling. Madison transmutes it into a raft for the team to land safely on. Atlanteans emerge from the water to begin the battle, as does half an Atlantean sub, somewhat somehow blown to pieces before it surfaced.
Yeah. Fun fact, Snowbird is a polar bear here for a moment on their little life raft, but then she turns into a whale.
Mm.
That's how she joins the fight.
So the sub like floats over and breaks apart the raft, and Madison, who can't swim, is blown out of the water to float on a smaller piece of debris.
He can't swim. And that's his big secret.
Neither can Puck.
At least Puck has a suit. Yeah. Madison didn't even think to make a suit for himself because he's like, there's no way I'm...
Yeah. So they're diving in. Puck grabs onto Snowbird Whale and they're all going down. And this is where we find out, like, she gave up her goddess status, so she doesn't need to stick to the international geopolitical border of Canada.
It's true.
And she can transform it into any animal, not just those found in Canada.
Yeah. I'm curious about what this means for her for the upcoming stories.
Mm. So the team meets up with the Avengers, and then, you know, introductions are made.
They're like, another force is coming, but it's the Avengers.
They get a rallying speech from Namor before seeking out Marina.
Yeah.
Heather points out a rescue mission for hostage is accepted under international law, thereby sidestepping the team being there causing an international incident with Atlantis.
Yeah. She's sort of taken aback a bit by Cap's assertiveness. And North Star is like, why does Vindicator so easily yield command to this aged Avenger? What a dick.
Weird. Atuma, looking on as the heroes get closer, is upset that so many forces are arrayed against him.
It's true.
He's like, but why do they hate me? Atuma grabs Namor, and Marina is held by another of... As the teams are surrounded by Atlanteans, and Atuma gives an order for their slaughter.
I will say that it's cool. Beera is like, I hated my cousin. He's the worst.
Yeah.
But now that he's like a little bit humble and sort of reasonable, I can see why he would be a ruler of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Nora's checking in.
Oh.
Yes.
Luckily, there are no cords for her to eat.
Yes.
She would love to trim some up. She had a very active morning. She was digging over by the litter box on the far side of the room.
Yeah.
So it's good the towels underneath are held in place by a weight.
Yes.
Otherwise, it would have been a whole big mess.
All right.
She might have chewed a hole in it.
I wouldn't doubt it. Is that it for you for this issue?
It is. I mean, I love that Monica Rambeau is here as Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Hunky Hercules. And Black Knight is such a 90s bro. He's got like his, it's like a jet ski, but it's working underwater.
Yes, it's his like electronic steed. And this is not even the 90s. We're still in 86.
Oh, so. He's an 80s bro.
All right, so let's talk about the letters page. Brian Nelson of Los Angeles writes a long, thoughtful letter on the whole book and the development of Matlow's storytelling with the team. But the real highlight is him saying, admit that North Star is gay.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Homosexual.
Yes. Complimentary. The interesting thing is that every title would get a lot of letters. And it was up to the assistant editor, typically, to pick the letters. This is what Marcus
McLaurin of what gets printed?
Me. Yes. So the assistant editor, I'm going to flip to the letters page to see if it lists it. It usually does. Our assistant editor is Rosemary McCormick Lowy. And she picked that letter and printed that in the book. So this is just another component of North Star's gay.
Everyone knows.
Everyone knows. And
he, in one of these, I think it might be
yeah.
issue 40 when we get to it, is talking about love and the nature of love and the way that his thought bubble progresses in the grammar. It's like, oh, he was also in love with Walter Lankowski. Like, it's another piece of evidence that he is supportive of it. Another piece of evidence supporting the idea that North Star was also in love with Walter Lankowski. And it's just so interesting that like this subtext is not hidden.
No. And it's sort of, it's tipping the internal hand that they have. Like, everyone knew. The creative team knew.
Yeah.
He was gay. Matlow was writing him as gay.
Yes.
Byrne definitely wrote him as gay. So it's nice that they slip this letter in.
Yeah.
To just reinforce.
Like a wink and a nod to the audience who is sort of in on the secret that no one's actually saying.
Exactly.
So we just watched Ziegfeld Follies last night, 1945 musical number / variety show type thing.
Yes. To basically have a movie version of the Follies.
Trigger warning, like very.
Ooh, there's Yellowface.
Yes.
Fred Astaire in a very protracted dance number as an Asian character.
Yeah, even in the overture, you can hear the music and you're like, oh no, this is coming.
You know when a 1945 movie is using the da 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 da. Nope, not even in the 80s when that like signaled turning Japanese, was it okay?
No.
So you know it's real not okay in 1945.
Yeah, but I had forgotten how if something is gay, it was Bonnie and Blythe. It was used a lot in that movie to address people's moods and everything. So to go from that to this, I'm like, oh, yep, different time.
Yes.
Absolutely different time. And if you want to watch it, just know that it has not aged well. Yeah. It's real racist at times.
Yeah. All right. Next up is Avengers issue 272, Assault on Atlantis, which on the cover gets a big little splashy guest starring Alpha Flight.
Yeah, Snowbird is Snowbird on the cover, pretty prominently shown, as is Box. And I think that's it for the Elfins on the cover. It's maybe some of the others in uncolorized, very distant pictures. Otherwise, you have Namor front and center, Black Knight, Hercules, Wasp, Captain Marvel, and Captain America with like a weird gill thing.
Wasp. That's in the corner box. You said Wasp.
Oh, good.
But the corner box with the Avengers faces.
Yeah.
I just love it. And it's billed as Submariner versus Atuma.
Assault on Atlantis.
So this is October 1986. Our writer is Roger Stern. Penciler is John Buscema. Inks Tom Palmer. Coloring Paul Becton. Letterer Jim Novak. And our editor is Mark Grunewald.
Oh, we would have been half a year old. Yes. Or in your case, half a year and a month.
Yes. All right. So the beginning of this issue tells of the Avengers reaching the point where they meet up with Alpha Flight, including a short description from Namor to the team of his love for Marina.
And a recap of the battle with the Master of the World.
Yes.
Hercules is like, I know victory is assured. What do you think they're going to sing about us? I like that for him.
All right, so Atuma is busy taunting Marina in her enclosure and tells her that she will be the reason why the approaching Avengers, including Namor, will die.
And quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, pray that they die quickly.
The Avengers give battle to the Atlanteans for a while before Alpha Flight arrives. The combined forces assault Atuma's headquarters. Namor battles Atuma directly as Northstar stealthily slips in and frees Marina, swimming away with her.
I like it in this issue better than in the Alpha Flight one. Like, he seems more sneaky, like the distraction is working better.
Yeah.
Versus the other one, like, how did they not notice in the Alpha Flight issue? But the dialogue is very, very similar. I really appreciated that, where it's like, the same events, but from a different perspective, and it's the same language and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that part's neat.
So Atuma and Namor continue their battle, and the latter says he is not fighting for the throne. He just wants Marina. Just give me my woman.
Yeah.
Roger, who's been merged with the Box Armor for too long, surfaces along with other members of the team who see no sense in continuing the fight now that they've pushed back Atuma's forces. Marina, who went missing, you know, because she's with Northstar, swims to join Namor and is blasted by an Atlantean soldier, which causes her to flee. After backhanding the offending soldier, Namor goes after Marina. Monica Rambeau, Captain Marvel, invisibly overhears the conversation had between Marina and Namor. Marina's physical appearance has been altered by the stress she has been under. Girl, I get it. And she tells Namor she isn't a human or a woman deep down. She's an alien who imprinted because she was first touched by a human woman.
Yeah. I should want to point out, and this might be a seed that was planted, but when Wasp orders like who I think Wasp must be the official leader.
She is. She's the chairwoman of the Avengers right now.
It's she selects Vindicator, Box, Hercules, Namor to stay at the bottom and fight, and the others to go rush to the surface. And they're doing great, except Box starts to feel woozy from having been merged with his robot for so long. And that's why he goes up, which is different than what it's going to say in the next issue.
It is.
But they've been teasing this. What happens if Box stays in the armor for too long?
Yeah, it
makes sense. Like, it's a good logical place to put that, to germinate that seed.
Yeah, Matt Loewenstern obviously didn't compare notes on this aspect.
Yeah.
So the master, in exposing Marina to the other Plodex, you know, remember the sub?
The mate.
Yeah, the mate. Tentacles. It awakened a mating hormone within her that's now manifesting. Namor wants to help her, but she says that he really can't.
She's like hiding her face from him. And then when she reveals, she's like full on crusty, scary, monstrous. Yeah.
Captain Marvel then solidifies and, after apologizing for eavesdropping, says the Avengers may be able to help through their connection with scientists.
And Mariner's like, nope.
And she swims away, leaving Namor and Captain Marvel to think about next steps. Namor says it is now a personal quest, and the Avengers should stay out of it as he needs to save Marina's soul. He also resigns from the team, telling Captain Marvel to share that with the Wasp, and he's gone.
I keep wanting to call her Captain Photon, but she's Captain Marvel now. And I do appreciate that Namor is like, I don't care that she's monstrous. She is the love of my life. I want to be with her.
Yeah.
Like, good for you, Namor.
Yeah. Issue 40 is the official 25th anniversary cover with that cool frame that all of the official ones had.
Oh, there's black suit Spider-Man, Hulk, Iron Man, Captain Marvel.
Iron Man in the Silver Centurion suit.
Yeah. Doc Strange, Namor, Captain America, Wasp, Ant-Man. I think that's Puck. Half cut off by the little Spider-Man face.
Yeah.
A bunch of X-Men, including Shadowcat, Colossus, Storm, Phoenix.
Rogue,
Nightcrawler, Iceman.
Yeah, then you get to X-Factor.
Oh, that's why they're there.
Yeah.
Daredevil, Scarlet Witch, Vision, Hawkeye, Power Man, / Luke Cage, The Thing, She-Hulk, in the Fantastic Four outfit.
And I just pre-ordered that.
I wonder if she's the Invisible Woman yet, or if she's still Invisible Girl.
Because
isn't she Invisible Girl for like way longer than
she's right think? Around the time that she became Invisible Woman in 86.
Johnny Storm and Thor.
So what?
And it's a close-up of Heather, and her team is reflected in her indestructible sunglasses.
Yes. This cover, people collect these covers. I would love to. Some of them are super hard to find.
Oh.
Like the issue of Ewoks with this cover, Care Bears.
Oh, Care Bears would be fun. I showed one of my coworkers the Ewok movie that you made me watch with the small children.
Yes.
And she's like, yes, I need this. It was
They're
great.
Cute, though.
She was saying
with
how
Sindel.
Who?
Sindel, the little blonde hair girl.
Oh. She was saying that she would tell people that she had never seen Star Wars because she was so over being talked down to by Star Wars bros and like the inherent misogyny of that.
Yeah. So this issue is entitled Love.
We have Namor.
Yeah, he's calling out Marina.
It's very Streetcar.
Mm.
Yes.
We have the same creative team as issue 39, so. People can rewind if they want to hear it.
So we've got Heather, Northstar, and Aurora chasing after him. And
they task Northstar with keeping the peace. They're like, can you just be cool?
But you're also the fastest, so we need you to chase after him, but don't be a dick.
Yeah. So Box has some twinges of pain. And it's revealed that in the course of the battle, in the midst of some confusion, he morphed out of the armor into the deep water. And popped right back in, but he now has a case of the bends.
Yeah.
He phases out. And so this sets up like
what comes after?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The seed continues to grow. So we get that. We get Snowbird as the whale. She's a potted plant in these issues, I feel like. She just gave birth to a kid that was subsumed into pestilence, and she's here, but she's not doing anything, which is odd to me.
And so just to go back to Roger Box for one second.
Yeah.
He's fine in the armor, but he has to stay in the armor. And Aurora's upset at this news, and she says she can't love a suit of armor.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Where?
It's in there.
Oh.
She's like, Roger, I cannot hump you.
Oh. Except for the twinges of psychosomatic pain, I'm okay as long as I stay a robot. And she's saying, but I cannot love a machine. And he's like, Aurora, is that all you can think about? I guess it is. Don't worry, I'll find my way back to manhood.
This is probably the point where editor Laura on my book is like, why is Aurora such a hoe?
Because, as we know from Demanda Martini, a girl's gotta eat.
Yes. So Mass and Jeffries is alongside the group in a personal submarine.
He made it, and it's like good for him for figuring out how to be helpful without having to directly confront his fear of water.
And he doesn't need the visualization of stuff from Roger Box anymore. Like, he can envision everything and execute it, where before they had to be a team.
Oh.
Yeah. So within the sub, he's tracking Namor.
He's got Marina, a sonar.
And something bigger.
Yes. So they all go. Namor is reflecting on the nature of love, as I mentioned.
So Northstar catches up and swirls around him.
I have seen the turmoil love can wreak on the surface. As I once was, my sister Aurora is a slave to love. And she in turn has enslaved others, Walter Lankowski, Roger Box, and myself fraternally, of course. But is Aurora's longing for love merely a reaction to her loathing of her other loveless Jean-Marie persona? Question mark.
So,
I'm faster than Namor. I'm going to swim in circles around him.
And then Namor's like, I used to be an asshole like him, but I have bigger things to worry about right now.
It's true. Why would you play games when my love's life may be at stake?
So
good for Northstar for like facing this check on his being a jerk and actually taking it in.
Yeah. So he is sort of left there by Namor, who's like, I'm going after Marina. And she's now covered with large bumps and believes herself pregnant due to the encounter with the Plodex aboard the Master's ship months before.
And like, she is feeling it all over. She's reflecting on the nature of the Plodex and how they adapt to survive at all costs. And like, was merely touching her, the mate, the Plodex mate, enough to get her pregnant. And is this what her pregnancy is going to look like?
So Alpha Flight arrives as she's sharing these suspicions with Namor, and a moral discussion breaks out about what to do with her and her unborn babies.
I was so surprised by this.
Heather says Marina and her unborn children must be destroyed.
Yeah.
Which probably compelled the other note that I got when Laura was going in this area, where she's like, why does Heather just want to murder everyone? Namor wants to raise the children with Marina.
Thinking, like, making a full argument of, like, you didn't choose to be a monster. You were, like,
you imprinted
a loving
on,
person.
You imprinted on your mom. Like,
right.
A human woman full of love and care touched you. You imprinted on that. We can do the same with whatever may be coming out of your forearm or whatever.
Like, more than just the physical appearance of being a humanoid, like all the emotional bits that came with it. And Northstar raises a good point, where when Heather's like, the Plodex are going to grow and divide and take our places, sort of.
Like, the nature of the Plodex is that they are conquerors.
Yes, they are going to supplant us.
Yes.
Which is real close to some real gross theory.
And Heather doesn't believe that biological programming can be overwritten.
Nope.
It's not a risk worth taking.
And Northstar is like, need I remind you, Vindicator, that same argument is often advanced against mutants such as Aurora and I. Which, like, yay for bringing, reminding readers that, yes, they are mutants. They're not just general superpowered people.
All right, so at this point, the other Plodex, the other thing that Madison was tracking, swims up and attacks the assembled heroes.
It's changed.
It wasn't destroyed. We thought maybe it went down with that ship.
And it instead ate other predators. And so it's got, like, so many heads. There's goblins and, like, a brood-type looking one. There's lions.
And it's been tracking Marina.
Yeah.
And she in turn is drawn to it, and yeah. Heather fires upon her, which causes Namor to step in front of the blast to prevent any further aggression from Heather.
Yeah, she's going full bore. Well, it's more at the mate than Marina, but I don't think she really cares.
No. So a scuffle ensues with Namor. Marina looks back and realizes that her love for Namor is more than her biological desire to mate with the other Plodex. And at that realization, the bumps on her body go away, and she's once again sort of human-presenting, shedding any of her monstrous looks.
Yeah.
Seeing this, the team and Namor go all in on attacking the Plodex and, combining their powers, rip it to shreds.
They do, like, full-on rip-it-to-shred situation.
Yeah.
And we get these developments in the text bubbles around all this action, that Marina was never pregnant. She was merely in a state of breeder receptivity, genetically designed to attract a male of her species to complete the process of perpetuating the race. By choosing humanity, Marina stopped sending out biological signals that she was ready to mate, and the Plodex is full-on aggression. But we get, like, that's a whole thing yeah. worth noting and, like, but also in this battle where it's ripped to pieces, you get like all these tentacles flying off, and Northstar, Aurora, and Namor create little funnels that like drill through this thing. Mm. It's weird. So weird.
After the battle, Namor and Marina are reunited and decide to get married. And conveniently, Namor has a villa that's not in Atlantis, and they go to that.
It's referenced in Fantastic Four number 9, which is in the 60s.
Yeah, it is.
So good for them for finding something from 20 years ago and yeah. moving it forward.
So there are some expat Atlanteans led by Bira and Lord Vashti. And then there's a time jump. Namor and Marina are married before the citizens of their new kingdom of Diluvia.
Which I always wondered where that came. I feel like I've seen that name a few times. But also his wedding robe is real cool. And I actually do like Marina's little... boy haircut with the dress with the thingy behind her.
No.
Like Sinister Exodus would be on board for the, I don't know what you even call that. It's like a poster board behind your head.
Oh, yes. But, like a cowl.
Yes, but it's just a circle with a line in it.
Like a gilded lily?
Sort of.
Okay.
Happy ending.
Happy ending. So I think that my takeaway is that Marina has a lot of facets that writers can play around with.
Yeah.
And since I think it's like issue 33 or 34 is where this started heating up. This is where Mantlos started talking about what's going on with Marina and giving little flashes. Like sees Heather fly overhead. But
is racked by pain, so she can't reach out to her teammate.
Yep. So it was a slow burn to start off with. Then it became the main storyline and a crossover point. So,
which is cool. And yeah. It's nice that Namor, who had a bigger role in some early issues, mm-hmm. is back again
yeah.
in the same capacity. So that continuity is neat.
Yes. So, I think, you know, this is 40 issues in. She finally gets a fairy tale ending.
Yeah, I'm happy for her.
Yeah.
I'm glad Vindicator was wrong and she didn't have to be destroyed along with her forearm children.
And I think at this point, 40 issues in, one could make the argument that she's one of the better developed characters, one of the more well-rounded characters
yeah.
in Alpha Flight, even though she's not part of the team for more than half of that run.
Who else is in that echelon?
Heather, I think.
Yeah, Heather, Puck, maybe Northstar.
Maybe.
From the Pink Pearl stuff.
Yeah, but that's about it. Like, otherwise...
Like, we get little bits about Aurora, but not much.
Aurora is horny.
Shaman only recently had a more powerful story.
Yeah. Talisman no.
was gone for so long.
Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting how even though she wasn't around a lot and was a originally a member of Beta Flight, then called up right away, then disappeared. Like, there, that character had a lot done to it.
Yeah.
Marina, low-key, one of the well-written characters of the run so far.
Yeah.
But now she's gone.
This is them writing her out of the comics?
Basically, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I know there's other things that happened to her.
Yeah.
But I guess that's much later.
Yes.
And not in an Alpha Flight book.
Yeah. So next episode for Alpha Flight, we have the first annual.
Oh.
And
4 years in?
Yep. And then a couple regular issues.
Okay.
Yeah. So that should be a lot of fun. We'll get to meet at least one new character who sticks around.
Purple Girl?
Yes.
I think I saw her on a cover when I was digging through the box.
Oh, yes. So Kara Kilgrave is coming in pretty soon.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next time.
Be well.
Bye.